Hi, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving. Welcome to Packers Unscripted. I am Mike Spofford. Sitting next to my colleague, Wes Hodkiewicz, we're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And, Wes, we're another day closer to Sunday Night Football. Packers and Steelers at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. And I think I speak for the entire Packers team when you talk about this being a bounce-back week, coming off of obviously the organization's first shutout loss in 11 years. But when you talk about bouncing back, I think that speaks to two players in particular on this team, and they're both on the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, quarterback Brett Hundley after the four turnovers, three interceptions, and a fumble. And then also rookie running back Devontae Mays, who fumbled the ball on his first two NFL carries. He's got something to bounce back from as well. So a couple of these key players, potentially obviously very key players for the Packers against the Steelers, need to try to put last week behind them as fast as they can.
Yeah, I want to start with Devontae Mays really quickly, just because Ty Montgomery was not practicing on Wednesday with a rib injury. You also have Aaron Jones, who by all intents and purposes probably still going to be out this week with the knee. They could very well need Devontae Mays again this week. So
absolutely,
that's why it's so important for a young man like that to be able to flush it and move forward. I actually go back to something that Aaron Jones had said when he was addressing the media on Tuesday. Got to remember what happens sometimes in this game. Brett Favre, his first completion in the NFL was to the other team. Kareem Hunt fumbles on his first play in the NFL this season and ends up being one of the big bright spots, potentially the Offensive Rookie of the Year this year.
Sure.
Sometimes these things happen where as much as you prep for and you put in the work and you really just hone in on everything, stuff happens. So I think the important message that teammates have been trying to get across to Devontae Mays this week is that it sucks. Don't get me wrong. You want to move past it. You want to be able to just forget that game ever happened. But you also have to learn from it and get ready for that next opportunity.
Yeah, and what we've heard from Mike McCarthy so far this week, it sounds like he's perfectly willing to give Devontae Mays a clean slate, a fresh start here, as we had talked about. Obviously, in the heat of the moment of the game, Mays' fumble being the third consecutive possession to start the game ending in a turnover, you know, that may have played into McCarthy's decision to just say, hey, we've got to, you know, we can't take any more chances here. We've got to start cleaning up the act on offense. So a lot of things, you know, just didn't go Devontae Mays' way. But he spoke to reporters on Wednesday after practice and just said, hey, I know I can play better than this. The coaches know I can do better than this. And I just need to prove to them, my coaches and my teammates, that they can count on me. And really, that's for as much as he said the mistakes weighed on him, he felt obviously terrible. He felt he let himself down. He let a lot of other people down. It is, you know, Sunday will be another game, and I believe he's going to get another chance. He's got to seize it.
Absolutely. And again, these are sometimes the way that these things work. So for Devontae Mays, I think the thing you have to go back to if you're him is you've been in this program now for 6 months. You've been a Green Bay Packer for 6 months. All the work he's put in, this is what it's about. So even if you stumble a little bit, if you trip and fall, you have to be able to pick yourself back up because this is why you've put in that time. Aaron Jones is down. You don't know what you're going to get with Ty Montgomery. You need more than one option at running back. The Packers, yep, they went pretty much all of that game with Jamal Williams as the running back. But you and I both know when this offense is at its most efficient, when it's most successful, it's having multiple options, and Devontae Mays needs to be that guy.
Yeah, McCarthy essentially admitted he shrunk his own playbook by deciding not to go back to Mays after the fumble. That was one of those decisions through the course of the game. The Packers had to try to make do with just the one running back, right, and obviously things didn't go well. When you look at the quarterback, Brett Hundley, the other guy looking to really bounce back here, McCarthy described him before Wednesday's practice as very excited and very anxious to get back on the practice field. And as I wrote about on our website, there is no better way, the only way to sort of wash the bad taste out of your mouth from an outing like Brett Hundley had is to just get back on the field right. and get back to work. And that's what he's doing.
Well, I know you're a racquetball player, right?
Yes.
That's your big sport.
I don't know about big, but yes, I play the game.
You have a bad performance in racquetball on a particular Wednesday, you're counting down the days to that next Wednesday.
Absolutely.
If I'm playing basketball or something like that, things don't go right, I want a chance to redeem myself the next time around. Brett Hundley, this is his redemption. This is his chance. This is his opportunity to put that all behind him. And I'll be honest with you, Mike. A week ago, right at this time, you and I were talking about how far he came in that Chicago Bears game. I think it's important for Brett Hundley to realize that that's not that long ago. So Jordy Nelson mentioned this week, he doesn't want him pressing. Davante Adams said this week, he doesn't want him putting extra pressure on himself. He doesn't want him, you know, really putting heat that isn't there on his performance. Brett Hundley needs to go back to the way he was playing against the Chicago Bears. If he does that, he's going to be just fine. I think that's the message the Packers were trying to convey as they get ready for what is going to be a stiff test in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and I think if there's one thing that was maybe the most valuable lesson or the most valuable experience, I think is the better way to put it, that Brett Hundley got against the Baltimore Ravens, and obviously it didn't go well, and he didn't succeed in necessarily in his attempt to do this, but it was... You start the game with back-to-back interceptions, but your team is still in the game.
Right.
That's a real mental challenge to put that behind you and to keep pushing forward. And, you know, that's difficult for any quarterback in this league, let alone a guy making his fourth or fifth NFL start,
right.
whatever it is. So that experience, even though it wasn't ultimately successful, I think that experience is going to be something that will help Brett Hundley down the road. Hopefully, obviously, we hope he doesn't have possessions with back-to-back interceptions again. But even one mistake that he makes, he played through a game where he had to push through a terrible start from those opening two possessions. He's pushed through it. It didn't work out, but he's done it before, and now he's going to know what it's like if something like that were to happen again.
And the big thing I think that he can take, and also Devontae Mays can take too going forward, is that sometimes things don't go your way, but other guys are going to pick you up. The Packers' defense picked up the offense in that game against Baltimore.
No doubt.
The offense needs to realize that, hey, going 6-0 at halftime after giving up 3 turnovers, that's not necessarily a bad thing to be in that hole.
Yeah.
It's about trying to come back and making sure that you forget about those performances.
Yeah, no question about it. With that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. And Wes, as the Packers began the practice week in preparation for Sunday Night Football in Pittsburgh, a little bit of an injury update here. Clay Matthews was not practicing. He left the Baltimore game last week with a groin injury after getting a sack. But he's not necessarily ruling himself out yet for this week. And then Kevin King, the rookie cornerback who missed the Baltimore game, he was back at practice, and safety Morgan Burnett, who's missed the last couple of games with an injury, also back at practice on Wednesday. So what do you make of this injury situation right now on defense?
Well, the one I think you can make the most about is Burnett was actually able to practice in a full participation on Wednesday, a big sign for him coming back from that groin injury.
Yeah.
I know he's had some setbacks with those soft tissue lower body injuries this year. You hope for his sake and put that behind him, you know, get back to playing the role that he was on this defense because it's a very important one. If you look at more at Clay Matthews' situation, here's a guy who's been healthy the entire season so far, Mike. He's almost played up to 500 defensive snaps, which I think is more than what he already played last year, if I remember correctly.
Could be, yeah.
Right around that ballpark with when he had those shoulder injuries. And he's actually the third most active defender right now on the Packers' defense. So he's a big piece, and if they don't have him in this matchup, he wasn't really discounting himself. He said, you know, we're going to take the week with it, see how it feels, and go from there. The biggest thing is you don't want to have a setback with it. You want to make sure that it doesn't get any worse than it already is. But it is, it's sort of bittersweet for him. He finally gets that first sack since week 4 against Chicago.
Right.
And then a few plays later has to exit with that groin injury.
Yeah, and that's really too bad. And as we saw, the Ravens had a backup left tackle in there because Ronnie Stanley was not playing. The Packers did get 3 sacks in the game, one of them from Matthews. And you just wonder, you know, if Clay had been able to play the entire game, you know, how much more of an impact he might have been able to have. That being said, also on the offensive side, right tackle Justin McCray, who left the Baltimore game with a knee injury, he was also back at practice now on a limited basis, if I'm not mistaken. But a potentially a good sign there that that maybe McCray won't need to miss any more time. We'll see.
Well, first and foremost, Justin McCray is tougher than a $2 steak. I mean, this guy, he
you got
brings
that
it
right
every single week. I mean, he has the ankle injury. He's back at practice. He leaves with the knee injury. He's back at practice. I mean, you're talking about a young man that understands and really smells the opportunity that's before him right now. A year ago at this time, he's in the Arena Football League. Now he's started, what is it, 6-7 games for the Green Bay Packers at right tackle.
And more than half the season, for sure.
A little bit at left guard. So he's a guy who wants to be out there if he can be out there. Again, we're going to have to see what he does with the padded work when they get that opportunity. But, a guy that I think has really immersed himself in that offensive line. It's a big loss to not have Brian Bulaga. I'm not trying to undersell that, but Justin McCray has really been a godsend for that team right now and where he's been able to fit into this offensive line. And if you're the Packers, really hoping you can keep him healthy, not only for this game against Pittsburgh, but the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And getting back to the defense for a second, if Kevin King is able to come back and play this week, you would have King, you'd have Devon House, you'd have Demarius Randall. Obviously, we talked about Morgan Burnett, the safety and hybrid linebacker spot. How do you think the Packers might go about the Antonio Brown matchup, if you have Kevin King available? Do you put the rookie on him? Do you put the rookie on him with a safety over the top? Do you just mix and match, and wherever Antonio Brown goes, maybe, you know, it's whoever is in that spot? What do you think?
There's so many different ways that you have to take him into account. I don't think you can go into single coverage with him. If anything, they're totally two separate players, so don't make me mistaking here that, okay, Kelvin Johnson and him are the same guy.
Right.
They're entirely different receivers. But one thing the Packers seem to always do really well when they game plan for Johnson was always giving him some help to that side. Whether it was Tremont Williams matching up with him or Sam Shields, whoever it was, there was always somebody there with him for the most part. I don't know exactly what that'll entail or how they would go about defending that. Do you have a guy matching him and following him all over the field? Do you keep Clinton Dix over the top of him the entire time as well? All things the Packers have to figure out.
Yeah.
But the problem is with how multiple this offense is with Pittsburgh. Now, mind you, a lot of the passing game does run through him with Antonio Brown, but you know, you have to follow and pay attention to Smith-Schuster. You have to follow to Jesse James at tight end. There are weapons there that you can't let creep out and hurt you. So they're well versed in playing top-notch elite receivers. That's nothing new for Dom Capers' crew. But that being said, how you attack Antonio Brown, seeing him competitively for really the first time, it's be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, and Juju Smith-Schuster, you mentioned, he's actually dealing with a hamstring injury,
right.
So his availability for Sunday night perhaps somewhat in question. But with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkiewicz over there. And Wes, we need to step out of the Packers-Steelers preview mode for just a second, because there's a pretty significant piece of news here that we haven't had a chance to discuss yet on the show, and we need to give it its due right now. And that is that former Packers safety Leroy Butler has made the semifinalist list for the Pro Football Hall of Fame for the first time. And I know you know Leroy. I know Leroy. This is an opportunity that he's been waiting for. He believes that Hall of Fame induction is going to happen for him someday. I don't know if it's going to be this year, but the fact that he has now made that list of 25 semifinalists, it's actually 27 because of some ties in the voting. But to be at that semifinalist stage for the first time, that's a big step for the Packers Hall of Famer, Leroy Butler.
Yeah, if you look at Leroy Butler and you just get to know him as a person, an individual, he never stresses. He never presses. You know, he's just
pretty
so
relaxed.
Even-keeled.
Yeah,
in terms of just his outlook on life. I think, you know, when you know his background and where he comes from, the situation that he went through, and, you know, how his mom, you know, clawed and scratched for everything that they had, and where his backbone comes from, he's not sweating the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But that being said, this is something that it has incredible honor for him. And it's something that I think even when you heard him talk a little bit on NFL Network on Tuesday night, just how much pride he takes in being in those final 27. It's been a long road. I remember talking to him earlier this year and him mentioning, you know, when he first was up for the Hall of Fame, when he first became eligible, okay, it didn't happen the first year. Yeah. That's cool, whatever. Second year, it didn't happen. Third year. And then as it turns out, off that all-90s decade team, he's the only guy, offense or defense, that hadn't made it to the finalists yet. So there is sort of that outlier on there. So I don't think it's anything that's keeping him up at night. But at the same time, knowing what he did, knowing what that resume is, you can definitely get that sense that there is sort of that, well, why not me,
yeah,
kind of mentality.
And it's interesting how the timing of this in some ways, how it's falling into place, because yeah, Jerry Kramer, the only member of the NFL's 50th anniversary team to not be in the Hall of Fame, is a finalist through right, the Veterans Committee once again. And then now Leroy Butler, as you said, the only member of the all-decade team of the 90s to not become at least a finalist yet, is finally a semifinalist for the first time. And as we were talking during our commercial break, first player, Leroy Butler, the first player in NFL history to record both 20 interceptions and 20 sacks in his career. He ended up with almost 40 and 20, 38 interceptions and 20 and a half sacks. I know Ron Wolf has said, Ron Wolf, the Hall of Fame general manager, has said if there's another player from those back-to-back Super Bowl teams in the 90s, along with Brett Favre and Reggie White, who deserves to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, it's Butler.
It's the greatest rebuild in NFL history, for my money, what Ron Wolf did in reconstructing that team.
And that's why he's in the Hall of Fame.
And that is why he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You cannot tell me the greatest rebuild in NFL history has two Pro Football Hall of Fame players on it. In Brett Favre,
it's got to be more than that, right?
There has to be more.
Yeah.
And if you go back, and again, I wrote about this earlier on this year on Packers.com, the defense that they ran, Fritz Schirmer, and even to some extent Ray Rose when he was there, they were using Leroy in a way that really few others in the league were being used. Maybe a little bit, you could say Dom Capers with how he used, you know, and Dick LeBeau, how they were using the Woodsons and things like that.
Yeah.
But this is a guy that played throughout that defense. He was sacking quarterbacks. He was defending against the run. He was making plays in the secondary. It's amazing. It yeah, really is.
And when, you t- and when you
I'm
talk,
losing my voice.
Yeah, when you talk about that usage, though, it's an indication of how Butler was so ahead of his time.
He was,
in a
yes,
sense.
And, exactly.
And because there are more defenders now being used in all those multiple ways, and Butler was one of those guys who became, you know, an early trendsetter, and I think maybe that's partly why he's starting to get a little bit of a Hall of Fame run or recognition here. Now, that being said, this year, when you look at the guys who are in this semifinalist group, there are three brand new players who are eligible for the Hall of Fame the first time: Ray Lewis, Brian Urlacher, and there's a receiver. It's
Hines Ward.
No, not Hines Ward.
Oh.
There's another one.
Well, there's another one out there.
But anyway, and then also with Terrell Owens, who came right, very, very close to making it last year. I look at the list and I see three or four guys who are practically locks to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in this particular class. So I don't know if this is the year that it can happen for Butler, but the fact that he's gotten to this stage, I think, is a good sign going forward. And I think there's definitely a chance that it can happen for him.
Yeah, and it's so important, Mike, for him finally to make that semifinalist. If you look historically, that's where these guys that it's taken time for them to get in there, they've had to make that step. They've had to make that leap, no pun intended, with Butler. But I think this is the year for Butler to finally start doing that. Now we got to wait to January to see if he could be a finalist.
Yeah, quickly, do you think the whole Lambeau leap and inventing that plays into the Hall of Fame candidacy?
This is about changing the game, Mike. That's what honestly, that's what the Pro Football Hall of Fame, guys, players, coaches, whoever, who have changed the football. Leroy Butler helped create the most, you know, iconic thing
yeah,
in modern history for the Packers. I think you definitely have to take that into account.
Fame is the root word of famous, right?
And, absolutely.
And he made something famous, including himself. So with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, just to clarify, because we figured it out in the commercial break, those three newly eligible Hall of Famers that I was thinking are practically locks for this upcoming Hall of Fame class. And the receiver I couldn't think of was Randy Moss. How I did not remember his name during the last segment, I'm not sure. But Brian Urlacher, Ray Lewis, and Randy Moss, and then you throw Terrell Owens into that mix. That might be four of those guys in the Hall of Fame class, which really shrinks the odds for the other players. So sure. Just wanted to clarify that that was the name for whatever reason I couldn't think of.
I'll mention this. There's probably a segment of Packer fans out there too where I was like, yeah, it's okay. You forgot about Randy Moss. There's no big deal there.
Okay, probably. But speaking of receivers, on Wednesday after practice, we heard from Packers receiver Davante Adams. You mentioned earlier in the show he talked about not necessarily wanting to see Brett Hundley put too much pressure on himself. But Davante Adams, a guy who's willing to take as much pressure on himself as he feels is necessary. And he talked a little bit about his approach and film study and things like that and what he's done as his young career has evolved to this point. What did you make of that?
The two things I took away, one, I mean, he's a film junkie. I mean, yeah. A lot of these great receivers are, and I'm sure, Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb do their fair share as well. But it was really interesting hearing Adams' approach to it. Because he was asked, off season, in season, when you should watch film. And he's like, well, if you can watch TV, you can watch film. And Antonio Brown is one of those guys on his highlight reel. And I think the thing that stood out to him, and I think it stands out to a lot of people when you bring up any type of game footage of the Steelers, is just how Ben Roethlisberger reacts with Antonio Brown. He can be looking left, and he can take a sudden move right and just throw the ball up there and have confidence. We sometimes refer to those 50-50 balls. Well, as Davante Adams said, they're almost like 90% balls with Antonio Brown.
Yeah, he's 90-10, not 50-50.
90-10, yeah. He's going to go up there. He's going to make a play. And it's remarkable. I mean, you saw recently, I think it was last Thursday, where he had the one that he was like catching it basically with one hand against his helmet in the end zone. Those are the type of plays that cornerbacks just, there's nothing you can do to defend it.
Yeah, that's one of those things that, when Ben Roethlisberger has Antonio Brown one-on-one and he doesn't see the safety help over the top, there's a really good chance that that's where the ball is going. And Davante Adams, he admires players like that. Antonio Brown is a guy who certainly puts plenty of pressure on himself to make plays for that offense to be a star in this league. And as we talked about, Davante Adams now finishing out his rookie contract, really a player on the rise in this Packers offense. And whether it's been Aaron Rodgers or Brett Hundley, he's been producing.
And he's been always willing to take information from other receivers and apply it to his own game. I think that's a big part of what he's able to do and exactly what's made him the receiver he is now to this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.